Ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the point in our meeting where it's time for our public hearings. We appreciate the fact that you're with us this evening, giving up part of your Thursday night, and by the looks of it, maybe even part of your Friday morning, to participate in your planning and zoning process. Assure you that anyone wishing to speak on a given application will be given the opportunity to do so in accordance with the rules of the commission. At the appropriate time. And speaking of the rules of the commission, please allow me to direct your attention to our esteemed counsel to my left and your right, who has a few well-chosen words to share with you about the way we conduct our meetings and the way we would like you to conduct yourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the chairman stated, this is the time for the scheduled public hearings before the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission, as shown on tonight's agenda. These proceedings are conducted under the rules of the Planning and Zoning Commission. All commission matters are discussed and voted on publicly in open meetings. Everyone present is invited to stay throughout the commission meeting to view the commission's deliberations and the votes on the pending applications. In addition, these proceedings are broadcast on the internet at sussexcountyde.gov. Everyone in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion, and no applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Also, no signs or placards are permitted during the Planning and Zoning Commission meetings. Please do not do anything that distracts from these proceedings and follow the directions of the chairman. If you have a telephone, BlackBerry, or similar device, we ask that you turn it off now or switch it to silent service. The hearings will be conducted as follows. First, the application will be announced by the chairman, and the director will review the application and describe any agency comments or correspondence that's been received. Then the applicant will present and explain its application to the commission and may present any relevant exhibits and testimony in support of the application. The commission may question the applicant and its witnesses at any time. After the applicant's presentation, the chairman will invite public comment. Supporters will go first, followed by opponents. If there is a spokesperson or an attorney representing an organized group, we ask that that person identify themselves and speak first. Whenever speaking to the commission, please come to the podium and identify yourself by name and place of residence for the record. We ask that you be concise in your statements and avoid being repetitious. The chairman does have the authority to set reasonable time limits on testimony from the applicant and the audience, and he has the authority to terminate testimony from anyone that is irrelevant or unduly repetitive. Also, Sussex County and its zoning and land use decisions does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, or sexual orientation. Public comments made on the basis of bias and stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into consideration by the county and its deliberations. No direct questioning or cross-examination of the applicant, supporters, or opponents will be permitted. Any questions should be directed to the commission, and the commission will direct the question to the appropriate person if necessary. There will be no rebuttal by the applicant unless requested or permitted by the commission. Also, individuals supporting or opposing the application will only be allowed one opportunity to speak to the commission. And one additional point I'd like to make, because there's a lot of folks here tonight, and this goes to both those opposed to the application that may be here, those that support the application that may be here, and the applicant. We're going to hear probably a lot of testimony this evening from everybody, and we will take it all, the commission will take it all into account. As I stated a moment ago, we ask that you don't be repetitive in your testimony. Testimony is in the record whether it's said by one person or 150 people. So I know we'll probably hear a lot of things that are pertinent to this hearing, but we don't need to hear the same thing 150 or 200 times, and I'm sure Mr. Wheatley will also take note of that and kind of guide things along as he runs the meeting. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir, we thank you. Now, this evening we have two public hearings. It happens to be the same applicant and the same subject property. So what we are going to do is we are going to consolidate the record on these two. So we're going to have a hearing. We're essentially going to have one hearing, one consolidated hearing for both applications. Now, when we vote on these, we will vote on them separately because they are, in fact, two separate applications. But because all of the testimony of one applies to the testimony of the other, I would rather not be here until Tuesday morning. So we're going to do this one time, but I assure you that in no way does it detract from anyone's rights or ability to express themselves in regard to either. So whatever comments that you have for one will be considered for the other, and you can certainly make them all at one time in one trip. So our first public hearing is change of zone number 1729, Ida C. Fawcett, Fawcett Ayers LLC, and Massey's Landing Park Incorporated. And our second public hearing is conditional use number 1963, Ida C. Fawcett, Fawcett Ayers LLC, and Massey's Landing Park Incorporated. Mr. Lang.
Yes, thank you. These applications, for the record, are change of zone 1729, the application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from MR, medium density residential district, to an AR1 agriculture residential district. To be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 50.83 acres, more or less, lying on both sides of the eastern end of Long Neck Road, also known as State Route 23, also known as Route 22, and being identified on the county tax rolls as tax map ID District 234, Map 25, Parcels 31.02 and 31.04. Conditional use number 1963 is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for a campground to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 50.83 acres, more or less, lying on both sides of the eastern end of Long Neck Road, again also known as State Route 23 and also known as Route 22. And being identified on the same tax map parcels, tax map ID 234, map 25, parcels 31, 31.02, and 31.04. That was for the purpose of record. The application were filed on March 19th of 2013. On that date, the applicant provided a spiral-bound document titled Castaways at Massey's Landing, a family-oriented waterfront camping resort. And it makes reference to the zoning and conditional use applications and includes an environmental assessment, public facilities evaluation report, and also the preliminary land use service comments and responses, along with other documentation. And this booklet has been available since March 19th of 2013. The next document received was an exhibit supplement booklet. And again, it contains additional information related to those same documents. And it includes a willing and able to serve letter from Long Neck Water Company. There's a reference to a Delaware Transit Corporation bus stop location approval. There's a 2005 Massey Landing subdivision traffic impact study recommendations. And then the Castaways at Massey Landing rendered preliminary site plan. The next item was a copy of the preliminary land use service, also referred to as PLUS, and it's text from a meeting with the committee members of the preliminary land use service and with the state giving comments to the applicant and allowing the applicant to respond. That was dated January 18th of 2013. The next documents we received are multiples from the Department of Transportation. It is a January 28, 2013, references to the traffic impact study, an April 10, 2013 review of the preliminary site plan, whereby DLDOT provides comments, and then a May 13th of 2013 approval by DLDOT for the entrance location. So those dates were the dates they were received through our office. The next item is the County Engineering Utility Planning letter received on May 21st of 2013. This has not been made available to the commission, so I have to summarize those comments. This site is located in the county operated and maintained sanitary sewer and or water district, also known as the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. Wastewater capacity is available for this project. Ordinance 38 construction will be required. The current system connection charge rate is $3,711 per equivalent dwelling unit, also known as EDUs. In reference to the location size of laterals or connection points, the potential gravity connection points are available at Long Neck Road. Conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study will be required. In additional comments, they provide that the applicant seeks a change of zone from MR, to AR1 and a conditional use approval for a waterfront recreational vehicle resort with 322 RV sites and 10 remote tent sites and related resort amenities. The project is located within the boundaries of the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District, and connection to the sewer system is mandatory. An upgrade to the downstream pump station may be required at the developer's expense. When the pump station upgrade is completed, adequate capacity can be assumed if the total project is approximately 147 EDUs, as noted in the conditional use application. This project is located in an area that is prone to flooding. However, limited information regarding flood zones has been provided with the application. Sussex County reserves the right to alter its comments or provide additional comments pending the submittal of said information. The county requires design and construction of an on-site collection system to meet County Engineering Department standards and procedures, which is referenced previously as Ordinance 38. The county will assume operations and maintenance of the sewer system when beneficial acceptance is approved by the county. Drains from pools, pool decks, and filter backwashes shall not be connected to the sewer system, and alternative disposal methods must be provided. The county owns existing sewer components on the proposed site, and coordination of existing public sewer with the project's design is required. The county engineer must approve connection points and requires that the sewer concept plan be submitted for review and approval. System connection charges will apply, gives a contact person, and states also that a concept plan is required. The next document is from the County Engineering Department. It's actually endorsed by the Sussex County Historic Preservation Planner, Dan Parsons. It's addressed to myself and the commission. I'm writing to provide comments relating to the proposed development known as Massey's Landing Park Incorporated. Having reviewed the preliminary site plan toward the site and reviewed the Delaware Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs, plus review comments, as well as a report compiled by local archaeologist Dr. Edward Otter, I would like to offer the following comments and concerns as part of the public record for this proposed development. There is a known cultural resource on the Massey's Landing site. A prehistoric archaeological site gives a reference to two numbers. Land use has been varied in this area over the years, but it cannot be overstated the high potential for encountering evidence of Native American occupation in this area. Please refer to the provided map, which is attached as Figure 2, locating the known site in the area of high potential for historic and cultural resources. It should be noted that abandoned and unmarked human remains are very common throughout the region. An archaeological consultant shall examine the site to locate any remains, and the plans shall be revised to avoid disturbing said remains. Also, a Phase 1 archaeological survey shall be performed to locate any archaeological sites on the property to be submitted for my review and comments, and thanking and greatly appreciating the opportunity to comment. In addition, gentlemen, to the comments from agencies, we received 55 letters and emails to today's date at 4:30 in the department or the county council department. So I do have 55 letters in opposition. And we were also received on Monday, May 20th, a large three-ring binder containing 967 petition signatures in opposition to this application. And to close, all documents and correspondence are available for review by all the commission members and the public. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir, we thank you. And with that, the chair recognizes the applicant's representative, Mr. Fuquay.
Good evening, gentlemen. For the record, my name is James Fuquay. I'm an attorney representing the Fawcett family and the various entities that are the applicants on these two applications. The first application, as was noted, is a request to rezone the Fawcett's property from MR to AR1. The second application is an application for a conditional use for a campground RV park to be known as Castaways at Massey's Landing. And as already been noted, because of the dependent nature of these applications, we're going to be presenting all of our testimony and evidence in one presentation that would be incorporated into both of those applications. With me, let me just introduce, and this would be our order of presentation for everyone's reference, what we're going to be doing. I'm going to do an introduction and some of the legal aspects of the application. Mike Ryman from Becker Morgan will be addressing some questions about traffic and some of the engineering of the site. Jeff Clark from Landtech will be going over the site plan. Kathleen Walsh is a COO with Castaways, and she'll talk briefly about the operation of the park. And there's several members of the Fawcett family here, including Lynn Fawcett, and Lynn's going to speak on behalf of the family. Again, I would also just repeat what you've already noted for the record, that we did submit an exhibit book, which does contain the plus comments in our response, the environmental assessment and public facilities report, a cultural resource assessment that was prepared by Dr. Ed Otter, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers wetland delineation approval letter, a vegetation community report, and comments of Kelly Pearson of Back Creek Environmental Consulting, LLC, and additionally a supplemental exhibit book containing some additional documents, which will be referred to in our presentation. Before getting into the substance of our presentation, I do want to mention that, as you know, campground applications have become a pretty hot topic in Sussex County land use in the past 8 months. This is the third one you're going to be hearing. There's been two, obviously, prior to tonight. One was on Cedar Neck Road, which I was involved in. The other one was at Love Creek, which I think is still pending decision. And, of course, those applications had generated a lot of interest. And I think, as you will note, our application is no exception. Now, in connection with that, as has already been stated, everyone is going to have an opportunity to speak to present their opinion, and everyone is entitled to their opinion. And we are aware, as Mr. Lang stated, there's a petition there with almost 1,000 signatures in opposition to this request. And the cover letter to that petition states that the petition is a good indication of how the local community feels about this application. And the petition themselves state the belief that our plan will be will detrimentally affect the health, safety, and welfare of the residents. I mean, that's what those petitions state. Now, as I said, everyone is entitled to their opinion, but most of the people signing that petition have never seen our plan, and none of the people signing that petition have heard our presentation and the factual basis of what I'm presenting to you tonight. So please keep that in mind, because, as you know, as the Planning Commission, you're going to consider all the opinions that are expressed. However, it's your responsibility to determine what opinions have a factual basis. So what is based on fact and what is just an opinion? And your recommendation must be based on the application of the zoning ordinance and the comprehensive plan to the facts that you determine to be correct. So your decision is based on objective facts, not on subjective opinions. Now, as to the application, the Fawcett's property is located on both sides of County Road 23, which is Long Neck Road. As you know, Long Neck Road runs in an easterly direction from its intersection with Route 24, and it terminates at Massey's Landing boat launch, which is the state facility and parking lot. The Fawcett's land is adjacent to the state lands, and it's adjacent to the Massey's Landing Park, which is located next to the parking lot. Jeff, you want to help out over there?
This is the Massey's Landing
Park. And the Massey's Landing Park.
So this is the Massey's Landing Park site right here.
Okay. That is a manufactured home park, which is owned by the Fawcett family. The Fawcett land on the north side of Long Neck Road borders Putnett's community dockside on the west. The bay on the north, the bay and Mrs. Fawcett's home on the east, and that's Mrs. Fawcett's home right there where Jeff's showing, and then Long Neck Road on the south. And then the parcel on the south side of Long Neck Road borders Putnet Seaside on the south and the west, and Massey Landing Park on the east, and then again Long Neck Road on the north. The area included in these applications contains 50.83 acres. The majority, as you can see, is on the north side of Long Neck Road. Now, as I mentioned, there are other lands owned by the Fawcetts that are not part of this application. The lands not included are Mrs. Fawcett's home property, which is located, again, next to the state lands, and Massey's Landing Park, which contains approximately 100 manufactured homes on rented lots. And as I said, that is owned by the Fawcetts. The park was included in the original preliminary plan that was submitted to PLUS, but was subsequently removed and is not part of this application. So I do want to repeat that so there's no confusion about that. The manufactured home park, Massey's Landing Park, is not included in this application. As to the rezoning application, currently the land is zoned MR with an RPC overlay. The MR-RPC was approved by the county in May of 2007, and that approval was a MR rezoning and an RPC containing a total of 120 units. On the north side, that was approved for 48 single-family units and 48 duplex units. And on the south side, it was approved for 24 duplex units together with the recreational facilities. That approval, unfortunately, closely coincided with the beginning of the economic slowdown and the subsequent recession and kind of collapse of the real estate development market, resulting from the lack of demand for that type of residential development. And as a result, the land has not been developed, and it is in the same physical condition today as it was prior to 2007. Now, prior to 2007, when it was rezoned, all of the Fawcett land was zoned AR1, and it had been zoned AR1 since the original adoption of zoning in Sussex County back in 1970. Additionally, all of the land surrounding the Fawcett's land, including the Putnets communities and the Massey's Landing Park, are all zoned AR1, as is, in fact, the majority of the land located on Long Neck Road. So the rezoning of the Fawcett's land to AR1 will actually return it to the zoning designation that it was in from 1970 to 2007, and will be consistent with the existing AR zoning of the area and the adjacent properties. Now, the purpose of the AR1 rezoning goes to the ultimate proposed use of the property, and that is a conditional use for a campground RV park. The conditional use application proposes 322 RV campsites that would be served by sanitary sewer hookups, water hookups, and electric connections. The park would also contain bathhouses with showers and toilet facilities, and a laundry area with washers and dryers. In addition, there would be a general store, a cafe and snack bar, a swimming pool, meeting areas, administration offices, and a maintenance center. The facilities on the site are all for camp visitors, and they're not available for the general public. They're all as intended to provide on-site services and activities for the visitors to the camp. I noted from the minutes in the Love Creek application, there was a position stated on behalf of opponents questioning whether recreational activities would be permitted or should be permitted in a camp park, basically saying that the ordinance didn't specifically address that use. And I would add, nor does it specifically prohibit that use. But I would just state, if that argument is raised, that The recreational use is not only beneficial to the site, but it also reduces the need for vehicle trips, and it's certainly been a normal and customary accessory use to a campground. And I would think that the county would find it objectionable if we were presenting an application that didn't have on-site recreational activities. In any event, the site plan itself, showing in detail the items that I'm talking about, will be reviewed by Mr. Clark in his presentation. Now, as you're well aware, the purpose of a conditional use is very broad. The zoning ordinance states that conditional uses are generally of a public or semi-public character and are essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare. And because of a conditional use's nature and the importance of the conditional use's relationship to the comprehensive plan and possible impact on others, you, the Planning Commission, and the County Council need to exercise planning judgment as to the location and site plan of a conditional use. So in considering a conditional use, the two main considerations you have are its impact and its relation to the comprehensive plan. Now, in our application tonight on this conditional use, there are a number of very positive aspects for this use at this site. First of all, as far as sewer, as has already been stated, this site will be served by county sewer. It will be part of the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. The park will utilize approximately 147 EDUs, and the county engineer has already confirmed that that capacity is available for this site. Likewise, water will be from a public water company, the Long Neck Water Company. An ability to serve letter is in the supplemental exhibit book that we submitted. So again, the site will have a public central water. Electric will be provided by Delaware Electric Co-op, emergency and fire services by the Indian River Volunteer Fire Department. In addition to the general store and other services in the park, there's a wide variety of shopping, restaurants, and service businesses that are located on Long Neck Road and on Route 24. As far as traffic, Mike Ryman will discuss the traffic impact in detail, but because I think that really is the most important issue before you tonight, I want to summarize some of the traffic information so it's very clear for the record. First of all, a traffic impact study was completed by the traffic engineering firm of Worth Rogers and Associates, Inc. in 2005 as part of our original MRRPC application. And that study was reviewed and accepted by DelDOT, subject to certain recommendations that they made as far as improvements. Now, as stated by DelDOT, and this is on page 5 of the March 12, 2013 plus comments, DelDOT found, and I'll quote DelDOT, quote, that conditions in the study area have not changed substantially since the 2005 study was done, and that the development now proposed would be similar in its trip generation. Therefore, our findings and recommendations based on the TIS contained in a letter dated November 4th, 2005 are applicable to the current development proposal as well. And a new TIS is not necessary. That letter is in the supplemental exhibit book that I submitted. The letter itself on the caption has a date of November 23rd, but if you look at the bottom of each page, it's dated November 4th. So if you're looking for a November 4th letter, the November 4th date is actually at the bottom of that. Now, that's a determination by DelDOT, and that is the state agency that is responsible for determining traffic impact from developments. The existing traffic impact study data is appropriate and no new TIS is needed because it wouldn't serve any purpose. I also want you to be aware of the fact that DelDOT made that determination that I just read based on the plus information that had been submitted. And that plus information was actually proposing a 575-unit RV park. As I previously stated, the size of our application was reduced, and we're actually asking for a 322-site park. So our application tonight is actually 44% less than the application that DelDOT reviewed and that DelDOT found acceptable. So again, if when you have an opportunity to review that, I think that's very important. And when an opinion is expressed later that a new TIS should be done, remember that that is not an opinion with any factual basis. DelDOT has already stated that there's no need for one. Additionally, DelDOT noted that one significant change that has occurred on Long Neck Road since that original TIS was actually improvements at the intersection of Long Neck Road and Banks Road and School Lane. And that's now a controlled intersection with left and right turn lanes. DelDOT did recommend that the county impose the following condition if the county approves our conditional use. And I'll just read that for the record so everyone knows what that is. DelDOT's requiring, and I quote, the developer should enter into an agreement with DelDOT to fund an equitable portion of the installation of a single lane roundabout at the intersection of Delaware Route 23 and Potts Nets Road, Sussex Road 22C. The agreement should be worded such that DelDOT may utilize the funding contribution for the installation of a traffic signal at this intersection should a roundabout be determined to be infeasible at DelDOT's discretion. The agreement should include pedestrian signals, crosswalks, and interconnection at DelDOT's discretion. Now, the applicant totally accepts that recommendation, and it will be one of the proposed conditions of approval that we'll submit to you. Also, as Mr. Lank stated, DelDOT has reviewed the site plan and by letter dated May 13, 2013, has issued a letter of no objection as to the entrance location for the campground. DelDOT also requested that a bus stop be located on the site, and I think this is a very important and beneficial feature of this location, and again, something that I think is weighs heavily in its favor. Under tab 11 of the original exhibit book, there's information there about DART, which I know you're familiar with, D-A-R-T. It's a division of DelDOT, and it operates a resort transit system in Sussex County from late May until mid-September. There are various routes that DART operates, but one of those routes is Route 207, and that's the Rehoboth Beach Long Neck Potnets route. That route offers round-trip bus service between the Rehoboth Park and Ride on Route 1 and basically our site with stops in between. In our supplemental booklet that we submitted, there's a letter from DART dated March 6 of 2013. And DART's letter states, and again I quote, given the location and proposed land use of your project, given the location and proposed land use, your project would offer an ideal turnaround in conjunction with a premier bus stop. Now that bus stop would have a covered waiting area. It would be ADA accessible. It would have bike racks. It would have bench seating. It would have a kiosk for information and trash receptacles. Now, not only is the bus stop recommendation acceptable, but the bus stop will be a significant amenity for this park and also will contribute to traffic mitigation. Another favorable aspect of this site, and from my experience, I would compare this to one of the problems on the Cedar Neck site, is that Long Neck Road is a two-lane road with paved shoulders. And the paved shoulders exist almost entirely between Route 24 and the state lands. I know you gentlemen are familiar with it. You've probably ridden down there. This is shouldered. So the existing roadway will accommodate RVs coming and leaving the park without interfering with pedestrians and bicycle traffic on Long Neck Road. Now, Long Neck Road, like several low-lying roads in eastern Sussex County, experiences occurrences of flooding due to tropical storms and nor'easters. Similar situations happen in Lewis on Savannah Road, in the Bethany area, and occasionally on Route 1 even. As you know, most nor'easters are winter storms, and since the park is seasonal, it'll be operating basically from April 1st to October 31st. Any flooding that would occur from November through March would not impact the park because it would not be operating. For situations that occur during the season, and that would normally be a tropical storm or a hurricane, and again, as you know, these are not common occurrences. It's not that they're rare, but they're not common occurrences. The park will have an emergency plan. The park will implement a phased response to weather situations that would be coordinated with the Sussex County Emergency Operations Center. And basically, the park operation would comply with voluntary and mandatory evacuation orders, as well as notifying upcoming visitors. These would be people who have reservations to come to the park, for them to delay their travel to Sussex County until the park is reopened and that is authorized. There's a draft copy of an emergency plan that's located in our exhibit book. Again, it's in tab 11 of the exhibit book. And the evacuation at a park, unlike an evacuation in a subdivision or a manufactured home park where people have their own lot, this is centralized. People, as a condition of their staying there, can be made aware that they are subject to voluntary and mandatory evacuations. And services can be, utilities can be terminated, and people can be made to leave. So this is an enforceable evacuation situation. Now, as to the legal basis of our application, which, as you know, I need to address for the record, under the strategies for state policies and spending, the Fawcett property is designated as level 3, which is an area where growth is anticipated in the longer-term future, or areas with environmental features. And as is stated in our Sussex County land use plan, much of the county's environmentally sensitive development area, which is where we are, is designated as level 3 just because it's in the environmentally sensitive development area. But even with that level 3 designation, that acknowledges that this is an area which is part of a growth zone. And I would submit that when you consider that the Fawcett property site is surrounded by existing manufactured home parks, that it will be served by existing county sewer and public water, that it has adequate road access, and the availability of public transit, I mean, quite honestly, this should be level 1, not level 3. Again, it's level 3 because it's in the environmentally sensitive development area. Now, an important legal aspect of any change of zone or conditional use application is the relationship of the proposal to the Sussex County 2008 Comprehensive Plan Update. The plan plan has two land use maps. The first is the existing land use map. The existing land use maps basically shows the Fawcett land as bordering existing manufactured home parks to the south and the west. And in fact, the Fawcett land appears to be the only undeveloped land in that immediate area, and clearly would be considered an infill parcel. And what I'm holding up here is the existing land use map from the comprehensive plan. What I have colored in blue is the Fawcett property and this piece here also. And you can see it's developed entirely around it. So that's the existing land use in that area. The second map in the land use plan is the future land use map. The future land use map designates the areas that are growth areas and areas that are intended to remain as rural areas. And the majority of Sussex County is designated as a rural area. And that's comprised of low-density areas, protected lands, and agricultural preservation lands. Now, the Fawcett lands are designated on the land use map as being in the environmentally sensitive developing area, which is one of the designated growth areas created by the comprehensive plan. So the Fawcett lands are in a growth area. They are not in a rural or low-density area. They're in a growth area. As the plan states, the plan seeks to direct the county's most concentrated forms of new development to growth areas, including most higher density residential development and most business development. That's on page 3-9 of the plan. So again, as I stated, our site is in a growth area where development is being concentrated. Among the goals and the purposes of the future land use element of the plan are the following.
Somebody's got a phone. Let's please put that on silent. Thank you. All right, sorry about that. Sir, go ahead.
So among the goals and purposes of the land use plan are the following. One is to direct development to areas that have community services or areas that can secure them cost-effectively. Now, in our application, the Fawcett property will be served, as I said, by county sewer and public water. So we have these community services. Another goal of the plan is to protect critical natural resources. That's on page 3-7. The campground utilizes wooded buffers and other environmental design features to protect the environment, particularly in comparison to the site design of the older developments that surround the site, which, as we all know, were built at a time when environmental considerations had a lower priority or perhaps were not even considered. So as compared to what's there, it's really not comparable. But we're meeting all the requirements and designing this in an environmentally sensitive manner. So again, that goal is being achieved. A third goal is stated in the plan is to encourage tourism and other responsible commercial job providers to locate and invest in Sussex County. And that's on page 3-8 of the plan. And again, both of those goals are furthered by our application. Again, the plan states that in the environmentally sensitive development area, central water and sewer facilities are strongly encouraged. That's on page 316. As I've already stated, we have them. In addition to the environmental benefits of central water and sewer, I stated that the environmental design of the campground will conform with the laws, and that conforms with the conservation element of the plan, and that's on page 4-1. The campground will pay sewer connection fees and service charges. It will create jobs. And the secondary impact from the campers, and I know you're all familiar with that, the impact the secondary impact has on the local businesses, that will contribute to the economic element of the plan. And again, that's on page 8-1. Long Neck Road is more than adequate to accommodate the related traffic, which will be no more, and this is important, the traffic that's going to be generated will be no more than that which would already be generated by the currently approved RPC. There's no net increase. In fact, it's a decrease in traffic from what's already approved on this site. Adequate shoulders exist to ensure the safety of pedestrians and bicyclists. DelDOT, as I've stated, has reviewed and approved the TIS. The campground will be served by part of the DART Resort Transit System, so campers can utilize that service. And again, as I mentioned, the emergency plan will be implemented to coordinate with Sussex County Emergency Services for weather emergencies. And all of those things taken together are in conformity with the mobility element of the land use plan. And that's on page 12-1. In addition, the campground is totally consistent with what the plan calls, and I quote, the big picture trends. The big picture, as envisioned by the plan, is that Sussex County will maintain its role as Delaware's agricultural leader, Delaware's tourism center, and Delaware's major growth center. Now, that's what the plan envisions. And this proposed use contributes to that vision as Delaware's tourism center. And again, that's on page 2-2 and 1.1-1 of the plan. And lastly, the plan states in its introduction that the county's approach to land use is the following. The plan states that Sussex County encourages appropriate types of development in compatible locations at suitable densities. The Sussex County government encourages economic growth, strongly respects private property rights, and is committed to maintaining a viable climate for preserving agriculture. Again, that's on 2-2 of the plan. This application has no negative impact on agriculture. This application represents high-quality economic growth that is the type of growth encouraged by the plan. And as to respecting private property rights, the Fawcett family has owned this land for 75 years. Linwood Fawcett actually purchased it in 1938 from Mr. and Mrs. Massey. The state lands that became the parking lot and the boat facilities were part of the Fawcett's lands. They were sold to the state for that purpose. And basically, the Fawcett family has seen the majority of development surrounding them and all along Long Neck Road occur during the period of time that their family has owned the land. So permitting them to use their remaining property in a manner that is consistent with the requirements of the zoning ordinance and in accordance with the goals of the comprehensive plan is a private property right that should be respected. So in summary, these applications before you tonight are in accordance with the land use plan. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Mike Ryman to address some of the engineering aspects of it. Again, I'll be available for any questions at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Fuqua. For the record, my name is Mike Ryman. I'm with Becker Morgan Group. We are the site engineers for the project. Our address is 309 South Governors Avenue, Dover, Delaware. I just want to expand a little bit on some of Jim's presentation regarding traffic. I'm going to talk a little bit about stormwater, and I'm going to talk a little bit about sewer as well. As Jim stated, this project is located at the end of Long Neck Road. Long Neck Road is actually classified as a major collector road, and that's important. That is the same classification of Route 24, and that classification is done by DelDOT. DelDOT publishes functional classification maps and determines those classifications of the roadway within the network. Based on DelDOT's definition, a major collector provides, and this is straight from their definition, quote, provides land access and collects traffic from lower classifications, channeling them to higher classifications. So this is unique in that we have a road that is a dead-end road, but is actually constructed to a much higher standard than what is there, meaning it is a major collector with 12-foot lanes and 8-foot shoulders. So we have 12-foot lanes, 8-foot shoulders. That is the same as what is on Route 24. 12-foot lanes are the same as what is on Route 1, and what is on I-95. So there are very wide lanes along the property frontage and from Route 24 to the site. If you could put the board up. Our project proposes two access points. The first access point to the east, right there. The second access point to the west. These are the same access points that existed from the previous plan that is currently recorded and has been reviewed by DLDOT, as Mr. Fuquay had stated. Just to touch a little bit on the traffic study in a little bit more detail, this is a copy of the traffic study that was done back in 2005. We had to make application to DLDOT to obtain a letter of no objection to entrance location for this project. And as part of that process, they look at this study in the context of this project. And DLDOT, within Chapter 2 of their regulations, has the discretion to determine whether or not this study is still valid for this project. And as Mr. Fuquay stated, and as is noted in the plus comments, they found that the conditions in this area have not changed substantively enough that a new study is warranted. It's also want to note that the study that was done was actually for 130 residential units in total. The recorded plan that is sitting there today on the property is 120. This project would result in a 20% reduction in traffic from the current recorded plan. So the amount of traffic that was anticipated in the study that was reviewed by DLDOT is more than the traffic that is proposed by this project. Again, when DLDOT made that determination, when they looked at this and they looked at our application, it was based on a 575-unit plan or 575 RV plan. Our application, as you know, is now 322. So they made that determination even when our project was much larger than it now currently is. Although they agreed with this study, they still require that we have to agree to the improvements and recommendations of the study. So there are some recommendations. The one recommendation is the improvements at Route 23 and Banks Lane. As Mr. Fuquay has stated, those have actually already taken place. Those are in place. Those improvements have occurred. The second is the improvements at Route 23 and Potsnet Road, which would either be a signal or a roundabout, and we would be responsible to share in the construction of those improvements and actually execute a signal agreement to ensure that they are complete. So as part of that process, as Mr. Fuquay stated, they reviewed the study, they reviewed our plans. Our plans include full geometry, full designs of the entrance, the locations as they are shown on the plan, and we received a letter of no objection from them on May 13th, which was submitted, as Mr. Lank noted, for the record. As it relates to stormwater management, we will be required to meet DENREC stormwater management requirements, as you know, and we are proposing a series of green technology management practices throughout the site. Those include multiple bioretention areas. We're proposing to use pervious pavement, actually, for a portion of the project to take advantage of pervious pavement and runoff reduction methods. And we're proposing a number of filter strips throughout the project. If you could take that down, actually. I want to point out that the surrounding development, all of the surrounding development, basically, that you see there would not be able to occur the way that it is today under DENREC's guidelines. All of those developments were done prior to any stormwater regulations. We now live and work in a world where those regulations are there, and we have to comply with those regulations, and they are much more stringent. So you would not be able to develop those properties the way that they are today under DENREC's guidelines. They don't have any stormwater management. We would have a significant amount of stormwater management. Mr. Fuquay already touched on sewer capacity. We've met with Sussex County Engineering a number of times. The capacity exists. We are 147 EDUs, which is very close to the previous record plan that is there. There's already been some analysis of downstream pump stations and the system in the area, and the capacity is available for this project. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Clark, and he will talk to you a little bit about the plan.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jeff Clark. I'm a landscape architect with the firm of Land Tech Land Planning, situated in Ocean View, Delaware. And we have prepared a couple of different sets or a couple of sets of these plans so that the folks in the back can follow along, and we'll move these exhibits around so they can see what's going on as I present this evening. Would like to just point out that before this plan was prepared and even filed for this public hearing tonight, that the property was evaluated for the existence of federal and state of Delaware jurisdictional wetlands. As has already been pointed out, that jurisdiction approval has been issued. The entire property was evaluated for the existence of rare, threatened, or endangered plants and animals. Letters in the file show that none were found. A complete boundary survey was conducted. A detailed aerial topographic map was prepared. Soils on the site were mapped by a professional soil scientist. Published FEMA flood zone boundaries on the site were mapped. Cultural resources assessment was prepared by an archaeologist, Dr. Edward Otter. Conceptual plan was presented to DLDOT planning staff and to the Office of State Planning. You heard earlier that the PLUS agencies have all weighed in on this plan. We've also presented to the Sussex Conservation District Program Manager, and the plan was presented to the Long Neck Water Company, their engineer, their director, their director of operations, their board president. Plan was presented to the Delaware State Fire Marshal's Office, and we've met with the Indian River Volunteer Fire Company. The plan, as you've heard, was presented to the Sussex County Engineering Department planning staff, and of course your zoning department director and assistant director. This plan that we have here this evening then addresses comments by each of those agencies and the individuals that we've spoken with. I'd like to point out that we've also presented this plan to the leadership of the Massey's Landing Park Homeowners Association before this evening, and we've also met with what's called the Joint Processing and Planning team. It's various DENRIC sections within the agency, such as Natural Heritage and the Wetlands Branch, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, National Marine Fisheries, those folks who regulate things on the water. I think some of you, if not all of you, have found the colored plan in the supplement book that was submitted, and I will be presenting from that this evening. Controlled and gated access to the campground is directly from Long Neck Road, where the existing right-of-way is 60 feet. As has been pointed out, there are two access points. The entrance on the south is about 900 feet from the Potnet Seaside entrance, which lies west of us. It's about 600 feet from the state boat launch facility. And the main entrance is about 1,500 feet from Potnet's creekside. Dockside, thank you. The no camping site has been designed for direct access to Long Neck Road. Every RV site is served by a 20-foot wide maintained travel surface. That's the shaded gray on the plan within a 30-foot wide private interior driveway. It's important to note here that the paved inside turning radii of each of those driveways entering, exiting, and throughout the campground are a minimum of 35 feet. That is sized to accommodate the largest RV and, more importantly, the largest Indian River Fire Department vehicles currently in use on Long Neck. All 322 RV sites measure at least 40 feet in width as required by your code, contain a minimum of 2,000 square feet, and there is a campsite detail with a bathhouse in the lower left-hand corner of that plan. Each of the RV sites, as you heard earlier, are served with sanitary sewer hookups, potable water hookups, electric and on-site automobile parking. No campsites are proposed to be within 400 feet of any existing dwelling on property of other ownership and are at least 100 feet from Long Neck Road. No campsite contains any state of Delaware or federal jurisdictional wetlands. The campsites will each be graded for adequate drainage to facilities meeting the requirements of the Sussex Conservation District. And no individual campsite should be offered for sale or be sold, and no individual campsite accessory storage buildings are planned. All sites are used only for tents, travel trailers, recreational vehicles, and equipment manufactured specifically for camping purposes. There are no cabins planned on the castaways at Massey's Landing site, no cabins. A landscape space and wetlands buffer at least 50 feet in width surrounds the entire campground. That's that green ribbon that completely surrounds the plan on both north and south of Long Neck Road. Those areas of the buffer that are not currently forested, most of them are, will be planted in a mixed deciduous and evergreen tree, shrub, and grass selection designed by the project landscape architect and environmental consultant. The buffer will remain, as is shown on the plan, will remain free of any buildings or streets. Areas of the proposed campground that are presently wooded will be carefully and selectively thinned and cleared in an effort to preserve as much mature vegetation as possible for obvious reasons that enhances the camping experience. New native trees, shrubs, and grass plantings within the developed campsites are planned, as well as native wetland planting enhancement areas, which I will speak to in a few minutes. There is no phasing of the 322 campsites as proposed. All 322 sites will be constructed at one time with the goal of operating the first camping season commencing in 2014. I've taken the liberty then to take sections of this plan and blow it up, and I'm going to start with the plan that's entitled at the main entrance there. The same that you see on the small plans, just blowing this up so the folks that are here to see this evening can see a little better. This building complex is at the gateway to the campground. It's obviously in a central location. It's accessible to all the guests here who are either on foot, riding bicycles, or electric golf carts. The general store, fitness center, cafe, and snack bar, as was said earlier, are primarily intended for occupants of the campground. Number five on this site plan is a kiosk where golf carts are rented to guests. You will note when you look at the plan all over, there are golf cart-sized parking spaces throughout the site. Number four is a campground concierge kiosk for guest services. That's a service that's been very successful for the Castaways Project in Ocean City. Number 17 is the proposed DART bus stop. The entrance to the campground from Long Neck Road is 30 feet wide, and that the reason for that is that DART requires us to have a dedicated bus lane. That also, for us, becomes a dedicated emergency access lane. But the DART bus stop, or the DART bus, has to, regardless of what's going on at the entrance, they have to be able to come in and go freely. As was said earlier, the DART standards include a shelter and a bench and a trash can. It has to be lighted at night. At the end of the main parking lot here is a central trash dumpster site. The campground operator will contract with a local trash hauler for daily trash pickup at individual campsites. And there are two dumpster locations. We'll show you another one later associated with the maintenance facility. And they will, of course, be in conformance with the county regulations. There are a number of campground recreational activities. Number eight on this plan is a swimming pool with a separate pool bathhouse facility. Next to number 10, which is one of five RV bathhouses planned throughout the site. A typical bathhouse floor plan is in tab 8 of the book that Mr. Lank referred to earlier. Each are handicapped accessible, include laundry facilities, sinks, toilets, and showers. Number 11 on this plan, moving up along the canal there, is a nature center and activities lodge planned as the starting point for age-appropriate eco-tours of the site to learn about the plants and animals that live in and around their campsites. So Castaways Ocean City, again, has developed very successfully an extensive children's eco-tour program using environmental science college students to run the program during the summer. Between the swimming pool and the nature center is a 3/4-acre open and wooded outdoor activities area, again, right next to that, right next to that canal. There, number 18 is one of two proposed crabbing and fishing piers designed as part of the hands-on nature tour experience and is also a place for camp or dogs to access the water for a protected swim in that pond. Number three is a kiosk housing the aquatic boat rental operation. And as we've presented to the federal and state permitting agencies, the small craft will all be non-motorized. That includes kayaks, canoes, rowboats, paddle boats, and small sailing vessels like sunfish and sailing dinghies. And this is primarily a recreational learning center for new sailors and kayakers, again, who can learn in that pond water depths at low tide are about 3 or 3.5 feet. So when youngsters, first-time sailors fall overboard, they can just stand up. The second site plan, then I'm gonna present remember when the application was introduced, there, in addition to the 322 RV sites, there are 10 tent sites. The tent area is set aside on an island of wooded uplands, and as planned, it'll have a small canoe dock and a small bathhouse. The tent area is connected to the mainland by an elevated walkway for safety purposes, and there are only 10 1,000-square-foot tent sites planned. One of the other purposes of the Aquatic Center is to accommodate these tent-only campers, and campers who choose to stay in one of the 10 remote tent sites park their cars in the parking lot right next to the Aquatic Center, put their duffel into a canoe, and paddle to their tent site out on the peninsula. 12 and 13 are both envisioned as weather-protected meeting areas for camper group recreational gatherings and activity centers. They become activity centers for, during foul weather days where groups are too large for one of the two smaller pavilion sites. The third site plan, that one, shows the beach area. If you look at the photograph behind Mike, you'll see that there is a naturally occurring beach area on the Fawcett property where there is a sandy beach that actually extends into the shallow water. This is the location for an expansion of that existing beach. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers guidelines allow for a minor fill in this area for up to a tenth of an acre for such a use. Number 20, again, is an area adjoining the swimming beach. It's set aside for pet owner campers and their dogs. Number 14 is a proposed beach bathhouse facility with cafe and beach grill. And as noted on the plan, this building is will be placed at least 50 feet landward from the mean high shoreline. Number 19 is one of two, is actually the second of two fishing crabbing piers proposed. And again, these have already been presented, at least initially, to the permitting agencies. And the last exhibit blow up is of the maintenance area. Number one on this plan, you need to flip it clockwise. There you go. Number one is one of the two pavilion sites that I spoke of earlier. These are open-air, screened-in roof structures with night lighting, tables, and barbecue, cooking facilities, concrete floor, similar to what you might see at Cape and Open State Park. Number 10 is, again, one of the five bathhouses that are planned throughout the site. And number 16, then, is a 4,800-square-foot maintenance center planned to house the maintenance needs for the campground. Now, along in front of there, along Long Neck Road, you see parking spaces. There's a collection of parking spaces and some trees. And if you look at the larger plan, you'll see parking spaces all the way down to the main entrance. There are 75 employee parking spaces provided starting here and moving back towards the entrance. I'm going to close with some environmental sensitive areas considerations. The Fawcett property, as was stated earlier, is located in the environmentally sensitive developing area as it was established and defined in the 08 Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. You heard earlier that there is public water and sanitary sewer service throughout the site. As outlined in the environmental assessment report, in tab 5, the Fawcett family authorized DENREC Natural Heritage and Endangered Species Program biologists to visit the site in February of this year, and a determination was made in writing that no rare, threatened, or endangered species were found to exist, and that is in tab 10. That same office later, after we had that evaluation, came back to us in writing and said that they also raised the issue of a possible eagle nest on the property. We have since documented that there are no eagle nests on the Fawcett property. In fact, we found the eagle pair, their nest blew out of the tree during Sandy. They actually set up a homekeeping again almost next to where they had been earlier. It's on what's called locally Lynch Thicket. It's about 1,200 feet away from this site. There is a required buffer of 330 feet from an eagle nest. We, of course, are well beyond that. As I said earlier, the Fawcett property was mapped by an environmental expert and surveyed by a licensed land surveyor to establish the boundary of wetlands under both federal and state jurisdiction. That boundary survey has been approved, and there is a letter to that effect, again, in tab 9 of your book. That wetland boundary plat establishes the point from which the Sussex County required 50-foot buffers are measured. State again that no improvements or land disturbing activities within the required buffers except those that are excluded from the buffer requirements have been on this plan. Those exclusions include the man-made bodies of water, the water-dependent maritime and recreational facilities that require the approval of the appropriate federal and state agencies, and include those exhibits we looked at earlier, the beach area in the northeast part of the site and the two fishing and crabbing piers. On April 18th of this year, my firm and the project environmental consultant presented this project to the joint regulatory agencies, and it was determined that this will need 7 individual permits. Through that process, we'll need the beach nourishment and reconstruction permit, a small non-motorized watercraft mooring permit, the remote tenning area kayak and canoe pier permit, that elevated walkway that we showed you earlier will need to be permitted, both crabbing piers and a permit for the shoreline erosion control. The combined wetlands and subaqueous lands permitting for those 7 activities will all require mitigation from both the state and federal agencies. In this particular case, the mitigation takes the form of two things. One is the eradication of invasive plant species. One of those you're all familiar with is a plant called Phragmites. And the second aspect of it is the introduction of native beneficial plantings, such as cordgrass and the native loblolly pine, in areas that are currently either bare or degraded. If you've been on this site, you know that both of those conditions exist. Detailed planting plans, again, have to be developed as part of the DENRIC and federal permitting process and will form the basis for the planting plans that we bring back to this commission if we're approved. As required in your code. All the fill material that's used in mitigation areas will come from, there's a very large white sandy area on the photograph that you see, will come from that area. It's an historic dredge spoil disposal area. The sand is now pure white, so that will be used for the fills in these areas. It'll be restored, meaning that no fill will need to be brought from off-site for this purpose. I guess it's important to note that without the revenue generated by the proposed land use, there's little incentive to cure the shoreline erosion problems and the invasive plant species problems that currently exist. The land use and the revenue it produces enables these projects to be undertaken as long as we follow the strict federal and state permit requirements. It was said earlier that most of the land, you can see by that photograph, that most of the land surrounding this applicant's property and the Fawcett property was developed prior to the enactment of the 1991 Delaware Sediment and Stormwater Regulations, and certainly prior to the 1988 county requirements for the vegetated tidal buffer zones. That concludes my presentation. I would be glad to field any questions you might have.
All right, then, Mr. Fuquay, are you done presenting? You're ready for us to ask some questions? Or?
Hold on. A few more minutes.
Oh, it's no problem. Just responding to.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Kathleen Walsh. I'm from Berlin, Maryland, and I'm the current Chief Operations Officer of Castaways LLC.
Okay.
A couple of the concerns I hear here tonight I'd like to address. The first one seems to be traffic. I don't want traffic on Long Neck Road either, because nothing makes campers more unhappy than sitting in traffic. I currently operate Castaways Ocean City. We have 378 sites as opposed to the proposed 322. I do not, nor have I ever had, a traffic problem on Eagles Nest Road. My survey comments would bear that out. If I had traffic issues, my guests would tell me that. We have several steps that we take to alleviate traffic problems on a weekend like this, Memorial Day weekend. We do things such as a speedy check-in service, meaning they pay in advance, they come, they go straight to their site. There is no backup on the road. On weekends like this, we bypass early check-in and check-out fees so people can come in early rather than the 2 o'clock check-in and them getting backed up at 2 o'clock. We stagger it throughout the day. So we have several things in place to take care of traffic. On Eagles Nest Road, we butt up to Eagles Landing Golf Course. So not only don't we have traffic problems, but that's a pretty treacherous drive up that road. There's golf carts going across because Eagles Landing Golf Course spans both sides of the road. We've never had an issue with accidents or problems there. So I have not had traffic issues at my current site. Another issue seems to be evacuation during tropical storms or hurricanes. Unfortunately, I have a lot of experience with this. I've been the COO during Hurricane Irene and Hurricane Sandy. Hurricane Irene, I was at 90% occupancy during that storm. I got everyone out efficiently, safely, and I'm much more proactive than even the county government. And the reason being is that the Bay Bridge closes to high-profile vehicles at 35-mile-an-hour winds. My people have to be out and across that bridge way before they're required to be out by Worcester County. So I have great rapport with the Worcester County Emergency Management Services, and unfortunately, as I said before, I have way too much experience in evacuation. I do want to touch on the economic growth issue that I'm sure your county is quite interested in. Our people spend money in our county. Ocean City has, in fact, built a pavilion for us, dedicated to us and another campground, so that my people can come into town. My buses into town are crowded. My people don't want to drive personal vehicles once they get there. They go into Ocean City, and they spend money in Ocean City. And Ocean City merchants are much appreciative of that. And lastly, I would like to address the environmental issues that we're all cognizant of. We have used porous paving throughout Castaways Ocean City with great success. I'm amazed myself at how quickly Castaways Ocean City drains after a major downpour. We have environmental programs, as Jeff stated earlier, that our campers participate in. We bring in environmental scientists, mostly college students, during the summer. And for me, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a city kid get out in the bay and find what's out there, and we teach them how to protect it. I feel as if we know how to run a well-oiled machine at Castaways Ocean City. I would be relocating to Sussex County to run Castaways Massive Landing if the county allows me to. I would become part of the community, and that would be very important to me. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any, but those are my feelings on the issues that have been brought up this evening. Anything else? Thank you.
Hello, my name is Linford P. Fawcett III. Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to present this application for a campground on the Fawcett family property at the end of Long Neck Road. I am joined here this evening by my mother, Ida Fawcett. My brothers and sisters, and some of our children are also here. All are members of the Fawcett family, and all are Sussex County residents. Our family has owned or maintained a residence on this property since 1938, when it was purchased by my grandfather from Gary and Nora Massey over 75 years ago. My mother has told us that she visited the property as early as 1948, at a time when Long Neck Road was just a narrow concrete road. Our family has lived and worked on this property since the early 1960s. The Fawcetts owned and operated a boat launch, bait and tackle stand, and we sold boat fuel for many years in the same location where the State of Delaware boat launch and parking lot now stands. The family sold this 3 acres of land to the State of Delaware for that boat ramp facility. This past year, our family has partnered with the Burgess family from Berlin, Maryland, who, as you just learned from Kathy, and the Burbages have lived on the Eastern Shore for generations, and they have a proven track record of operating successful businesses and a very successful waterfront campground in Ocean City, Maryland. I have personally, and some members of my Fawcett family, visited the castaways of Ocean City, and we have found it to be a first-class example of a resort RV campground. Our business partnership with the Burbage family allows the Fawcett family to keep this property indefinitely for future generations. In fact, our business agreement uses the term multi-generational. My mother, my brothers, sisters, and I have all watched as Long Neck Road has developed over the years. We have always respected the rights of other property owners to develop and use their properties in appropriate ways. The Fawcett family is now prepared to use our property in a way that we feel best benefits our family now and for generations to come. We look forward to your favorable recommendation and to a successful and long-term tourist business here in Sussex County. Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, I'll just be a few more moments. I do have some proposed findings of facts for changes of zone 1729 and conditional use 1963, and also proposed conditions for conditional use 1963. I'll give to Mr. Lank the handout to you. For the benefit of the people here, I'd like to read the conditions just so everybody knows what they are. The proposed conditions, there's 13, and again, these are proposed conditions which you gentlemen have the authority to change, modify, add to, whatever you deem appropriate. Number one, the maximum number of RV sites shall be 322. Number two, and I won't repeat this, but it was the Del Dot condition that I read earlier about contributing to the roundabout or the intersection improvements. Number three, the conditional use shall be served by the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. Number four, the conditional use shall utilize public water from the Long Neck Water Company. Number five, stormwater management and sediment and erosion control facilities shall be construed in accordance with the applicable state and county requirements and maintained using best management practices. Number six, the applicant shall cooperate and coordinate with state and county emergency preparedness offices to develop and implement an emergency evacuation plan. Number seven, the campground RV park may open no earlier than April 1st of each year and shall close no later than October 31st of each year. Number eight, the campground RV park shall remain vacant and no campers or RVs shall be stored on the sites during the period that the park is closed, except applicant-owned park model units. Number nine, there shall be no accessory buildings located on individual campsites. Number 10, all units to be used for the purpose of human habitation on the campsites shall be tents, travel trailers, recreation vehicles, and equipment manufactured specifically for camping purposes. Number 11, one sign not exceeding 32 square feet per side with lighting shall be permitted. Number 12, the applicant shall plan the entrance design to accommodate a bus stop and turnabout in accordance with DART. And number 13, the final site plan shall be subject to review and approval by the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission. In closing, gentlemen, the AR zoning request is appropriate. This land was zoned AR from the beginning of Sussex County zoning until 2007. No development has occurred on the land. It's in the same physical condition it was when it was zoned AR1, and all the surrounding land is zoned AR1. So this AR zoning is entirely consistent with the neighboring zoning classifications. Again, as to the conditional use, The conditional use for a campground RV park is appropriate. The park site design meets all code requirements, and there will be a high-quality recreation and service amenities on the site. The park is designed to meet all environmental protection requirements and will be served by central sewer and water. The site location is appropriate, being next to existing manufactured home parks and the bay and the lands of the state. The proposed use is in accordance with a comprehensive plan, as I stated in my presentation, and particularly the stated goal of the plan to encourage tourism in Sussex County. The park is located on a road with appropriate width and paved shoulders. The park use actually has less traffic than the use already that would be permitted on the site by the current approved RPC. The TIS, as I stated, has been reviewed and accepted by DelDOT, and the applicant will comply with all conditions and requirements. The park will implement an emergency evacuation plan to be coordinated with the state and the county. So I do want to state, obviously, there is a flooding issue on that road, but with this evacuation plan, this will not be contributing to it or in any way exacerbating it. This will be the first place to evacuate, and basically because of the central management, it can be done. And
excuse me, Mr. Fuqua. Ladies and gentlemen, we can too much side conversation, okay? Need you to hold it down. If I can hear you up here, it's too loud, and I can hear you up here. So just knock it off. Go ahead, sir.
Again, as I said, the flooding, because of the evacuation plan, will not be an issue. But if you look at the photograph that we have there, this isn't like an isolated place where this is going to be the only thing that's ever been designed and developed there. You can see the place is surrounded by other developments that basically have been dealing with that situation forever. So if there's a flooding problem, there's a flooding problem. It's not going to be our problem because we're going to be evacuating before there's a flooding problem. The park will be served by the resort transit. And again, I can't overstate how I think important that is, particularly with its direct connection to the Rehoboth park and ride. And lastly, as Mr. Fawcett just stated, the family has owned this land for 75 years. They've watched the entire area develop, and they have the right to develop their land in conformity with the zoning ordinance and comp plan, which we think this complies with. Now, based on the facts, in my opinion, not only do I think this use is appropriate, but I think this location is an ideal location considering the different factors we've talked about. So with that, gentlemen, that will conclude our presentation, and we will be happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
All right, sir. We appreciate it, and we'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.